Ooh.
Oh.
I sound really loud.
Yeah. Can you hear me now?
I can.
Hello?
And welcome to We the People Radio. We're in the new studio with the colored microphones, and it's a huge room and a big table. We can have like a party in here, actually.
Yeah, you can.
We have room for like hors d'oeuvres, all sorts of good stuff.
I thought there was going to be a buffet going on in here, but I don't see any food.
It does have buffet written all over it, doesn't it? So my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor this hour is Team Power. Team Power is our local John Deere and Kubota tractor dealer. And right now, if you want to get some service done, they're going to start their new their annual winter service special. Yeah, well, this is a little bit premature on this because it doesn't start till January. But I think I can say
that's
it now.
What, tomorrow?
Yeah, it's 2 days from now. So, but yeah, they're going to run their service special. So if you want to get some service work done out in the shop, get your machine tuned up or whatever, go in there and see them, and you get a big discount. And they're at 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City, or you can get them online at ReddingTractors.com, and their phone number is 226-9226. I think I'm popping on this mic. I'm not sure.
It's you.
Is it me?
Yeah, it's you doing it.
Okay. Yeah, I flinch. I'm popping, popping my ears. Ashley can take care of
that. The good news is we have full supervision today.
Yeah, we do.
Full supervision because we have Sheriff Tom Basenko here in the studio, so yeah, we literally do have full supervision.
Yeah, we won't get out of hand. We
won't go that far, but okay.
Hey, what's up with that? Your shirt matches your microphone.
Hey, I'm a blue collar type of guy.
We look like schlubs.
Yeah, I know.
What's going on over
totally
here?
Totally not coordinated. I feel out of place.
Spastic.
Yeah.
So let's see. I was looking at your bio because I don't read it that often. I see you all the time. I know where you are sometimes because we run into you always in Costco. Very odd. You've been in law enforcement for over 30 years?
Be 40 this coming March.
I better change that.
Yeah.
No kidding?
Yep. I started in 1979 as a deputy sheriff right here in Shasta County and worked my way up through the ranks, and here I am today as sheriff of Shasta County.
Did you want to... Were you like the little kid who ran around with the gun belt and the little...
Kind of. I enjoyed, as a kid, I enjoyed the shows Adam 12 and Dragnet and
Didn't
Chips
we all?
And all that, and was looking for a law enforcement career even when I was in high school.
No kidding. And you've, how long have you been the sheriff?
12 years now, and just got reelected to my fourth term, starting here in about a week.
Nice.
Wow.
Obviously, we've
and for the folks that live out of state and are listening, California has 4-year terms for a sheriff elected position, and
is that pretty standard?
It is pretty standard. We run on the other 58 county sheriffs. We run on the gubernatorial cycle, which just ended, and then some other states run on the presidential cycle.
That's pretty interesting. Yeah. How big a turnover was it? Was this one of those years when you had a lot of retirement and all that stuff?
We did have a lot of retirements, and then there was a few of the sheriffs that were not reelected. And I think we had about 19 to 21. Sometimes we have as high as about 26 within the state. But we had a few retirements that were midterm, and then we had the elections. And then, like I said, a few sheriffs were not reelected.
Hmm.
And... So we have a new group of sheriffs coming in. Like, we have a new sheriff in Trinity County, which is our neighboring county there. And then some of the other ones, Sierra County has a new sheriff. Los Angeles County has a new sheriff. Ventura has a new sheriff. Stanislaus County has a new sheriff. The sheriff there, Adam Christensen, will be retiring here in a couple of weeks.
Hmm. Well, just out of curiosity, I would think that you would be like a deputy sheriff and then you run for sheriff. But that's not really how it works.
In California,
all the time, huh?
There is a constitutional requirement that you have to be a peace officer or a retired peace officer with post certification. And post is the Commission on California Peace Officer Standards and Training. So you have to have a basic academy, certain amount of experience to be able to run for sheriff. In some other states, you could be a John Q. Citizen, Joe the Grocer, have no law enforcement background, and run and be elected for sheriff.
Really?
Wow. So yeah. You can have...
Seems kind of sketchy.
You can be a peace officer and not have post-training?
Yes. There's some classifications of people that have peace officer powers, but they're not a post-certified.
And that's good enough to be sheriff if they were to be elected? Or could
not
they,
in California. Not, you have to have a post-certification.
Okay.
And a certain amount of
on the
training
job.
Or on the job working and or a combination of that and education.
So in all the counties in the country, are they all in charge of the jail? Is that a pretty standard thing?
Can't speak for the other states. Generally, sheriffs are in charge of the jail, and there's a couple here in
the
California. Here in California, that have a Department of Corrections that's not under the charge of sheriff. I think those are some charter counties, but it's also a constitutional requirement within California that the sheriff run and operate a jail. I think there's one county that does not have a jail, but they contract with two neighboring counties and have to travel there depending on the weather conditions. It's a small county, so they travel to the north if the south is blocked and vice versa.
Wow. So you couldn't just roll in and, I mean, how many people are in, you know, I mean, when you go to work, you're in charge of how many people?
Roughly about 200. We have 200 civilian personnel, and then we have the sworn personnel that basically works the streets and our detectives. And then our people that work in the jail are correctional deputies, but they are not post-certified deputies. They are still deputy sheriffs and have peace officer powers when they're working.
Hmm. What are some of the civilian posts that you oversee?
We have our people that work in our records that process the paperwork, help the civilians with permits and different things like that. And then mainly those are the ones there. We have some that are service officers that work in patrol, and they'll be transferring our vehicles, maybe taking a cold call, past tense call that doesn't require an officer.
Mm-hmm. I see every once in a while you'll drive down the road and you'll see like a sheriff vehicle go by and it says out of service on it. Who's driving those?
Probably we could have those service officers could have a cadet, which is a young man or woman, looking for law enforcement, and they shuttle the vehicles in for service, repairs, and such things. Or it could be even a volunteer that we have within the sheriff's office.
And that can be confusing, I think, for some people when there's an incident, say, on the side of the road. And they just drive right on by.
Yeah, and it's hard to see that out of service site.
Right,
that is.
Yeah.
But it's also kind of nice, keeps everybody else on their toes.
Yeah, you don't know if it's in service or out of service.
Yeah, that's right. When I come out of behind you, you don't get to see that sign.
Yeah.
It is kind of funny. Well, I don't think people realize how much contact you have that sheriff's offices in general have with the city police departments, the FBI, the DEA, the highway patrol. I mean, you guys almost wind up being, at least from what I've seen, you wind up being like the glue. Because you cover all the areas of the county that aren't specific to something else.
And even then, the cities have the police chief and they have their jurisdictions, but we still cover the cities. Our jurisdiction can go into the cities. We have to work with our counterparts, our allies, with the day-to-day operations, but also, more importantly, within emergencies. And we saw some big emergencies within this last year. With the fires, such as we were hit with the car fire, and then Butte County was hit with the camp fire, and we rely on allied agencies. We had to, our fire, for the car fire went on for a month, burned about 260,000 plus acres, destroyed thousands of homes and structures, and we had patrols going, but we had to rely on law enforcement mutual aid. We just call it LEMA, and there was officers from all of our surrounding counties, probation departments, paroles, Fish and Wildlife through the state, California Highway Patrol, and the California National Guard assisting us in the patrols, the roadblocks, evacuations, notifications, and we would not be able to function if it wasn't for law enforcement mutual aid. Even down at Butte County, they had the same thing going on for law enforcement mutual aid there as well.
And you guys deal with all the little back roads and the byways, so you're really good at geography.
We're a small Northern California agency for the folks listening from other areas, population of about 177,000. And so the main population base is city of Redding, and that's a population of about 90,000. And
the geographic area is
geographic is huge. Our county is 3,850 square miles, a lot of areas to cover, a lot of national forest lands, and back roads, as you said.
Yeah, and you guys wind up on calls to all those places.
Oh, yes,
so when things break out, you guys have likely been there.
Also, within California, many of the sheriffs are also the coroner. And it's not that they do the autopsies, but they're responsible for determining cause, manner, and mechanism of death. And in Shasta County, I'm also the coroner, sheriff coroner, and we have a forensic pathologist that performs the autopsies and determines the cause of death. And we have other staff working there investigating sudden deaths, accidental deaths, homicides, suicides, those sorts of things.
We've been watching a lot of crime drama during the vacation. So we're all caught up on crime. Don't move to Colorado Springs. We've been watching a series. It's like,
wow, a lot of people going on there.
A lot of people die in Colorado Springs. Yikes.
Yeah.
All right, we have to take a really quick break. We'll be right back. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Just a good old boy, never meaning no harm. Be told you never saw, been in trouble with the law since the day they was born. Straighten the curve. Yeah.
Wouldn't be right if we didn't have a little Dukes of Hazzard. All right, so before we leave the idea of coordinated law enforcement, we should probably bring up the unpleasantness that took place over the holiday. You guys work with, well, you're supposed to work with, and ideally your job is best when you work with DEA, ICE, Highway Patrol, all the people who have all the different responsibilities and specialties. It's no different than like a GP working with
correct. It's
surgeons.
It's a team effort, and we have to be able to communicate with our other law enforcement partners as well, both on the local level, state level, and federal level.
The California, in their infinite wisdom, passed this.
Chose not to due to a law, Senate Bill 54, that was signed into law by our governor, declaring California as a sanctuary state. And in that, it prohibits sheriffs from communicating with our federal partners, such as ICE, to let them know that there is an illegal alien in custody. And when that illegal alien is being released, there are some 800 plus laws, primarily felony laws involving violence, that allow law enforcement, sheriffs, to communicate with ICE. But there's a lot of them that don't, such as a misdemeanor charge like petty theft or vandalism or a DUI, driving while impaired. And that we'd be restricted from communicating with ICE to advise them of that.
So if someone gets arrested, turns out they're here illegally from whatever country, and they've committed a fairly, you know, important crime, something bad, robbed somebody and beat them and all this sort of thing, and they're being let out of jail, they should be deported.
Correct.
That would be the smart
and
the smart thing
able,
for
and
us
we should
to
be
do.
Able to communicate with ICE regarding that. Now, that
scenario... Because you don't deport anybody.
No, that's the responsibility of the federal government. We're not the immigration police, but that's why we have the federal government and ICE to enforce our immigration
laws. But
you
run the jail.
That's right.
So you know where the guy was last.
Right. And the scenario that you just said of robbery, maybe beating the person with a violent felony assault, we would be able to communicate with ICE on that. But with a misdemeanor violation, like I said earlier, from a misdemeanor DUI or vandalism, no matter how bad that person is, maybe they have gang affiliations, a long history of violence, and they're here illegally, we would still be prohibited in communicating with ICE regarding that person.
Would you be able to communicate with ICE if, let's say, you pulled somebody over on a traffic violation, they were illegal, but they came up in the system as wanted for a felony warrant or something like that?
Now, if they were wanted for the felony warrant, the officer could obviously arrest for that felony warrant, take them to jail, and book them on the felony warrant. If the violation of that felony was not one of the 800 plus exceptions within SB 54, we would not be able to communicate with ICE.
800 exceptions?
Yeah. And of course, you
have to. So what's not accepted?
Mainly what you were just saying, the felony crimes and crimes of violence. There are a few misdemeanor crimes, mainly violent ones, that you can communicate with ICE on that.
But we keep hearing about these people that were, I don't know, their crimes sounded serious to me, and yet they were let out and either the police department or the sheriff's office, whoever had them, was prohibited from calling ICE.
It depends on, again, what that law is and what the arrest was for. Now, there are some ways that ICE can work around that. Many of the times the roster is posted, the jail roster is posted on the Internet.
Who's sleeping over that
and
night?
And then seeing who's in custody. And then also there's some other ways. There's some programs called Victim Information Notification Every Day, VINE. And that lets people know where this person is. You can sign up online, and when the person is getting ready to be transferred to another jail or let out, it can notify people. It was made for victims of domestic violence, but then ICE can also sign up for that and then be notified when a person is getting ready to be released, and if they can make it to the jail or be standing outside waiting when the person is released, and they could take them into custody and start deportation.
So, not really a subtle question, but what's the advantage to the public of not deporting criminal illegal aliens?
There's no advantage. The person is here illegally. It is a crime to come into the United States of America not going through the immigration process. Immigration and immigrants go through a process. If you're here illegally, you are an illegal alien.
And you're a criminal.
Right. I mean, and then you commit crimes.
And then you commit crimes against the state, the people. And you can be held accountable for them. And there are people that are in jails or in prisons serving sentences for that. But now, unless they're part of the 800-plus exceptions, when they're released, we cannot notify ICE, which doesn't make any sense.
So when they were passing that law, I'm assuming that sheriffs all around the state and other law enforcement, I mean, not just you guys, but
the majority of us were opposed to it, our association. I believe didn't take a stance on it, but we were working hard. Originally, when it came out, there were no exceptions to SB 54, and we worked very, very hard.
There was no way for you to call ICE up.
Right, and we explained the situation of people coming into custody for relatively minor crimes and being still gang members and having a violent past here. And so we were able to carve out those 800-plus exceptions, and we'd like to, in the future, through legislation, add to those as well.
Wow.
But I don't see SB 54 going away, especially with California being deep blue, and now the Dems having a supermajority in both of our houses of the Assembly and Senate.
It kind of blows me away. You know, back when 9/11 happened, one of the things that came out of that was a lot of the law enforcement agencies weren't sharing information with each other.
Right.
On these folks, and that led to the ability of them to commit that crime. Aren't we kind of going down the same road again now by tying the hands of?
You're seeing it time and time again. A year or two ago, there was a citizen of San Francisco who was murdered by an illegal alien who had a stolen firearm from a federal officer. The federal officer's car was burglarized, broken into, and there was a gun stolen. And then in court, he claimed that he found it and dropped it, and the gun went off and killed the person. And it was, in, of course, a San Francisco court. The jury believed that.
Where imaginary guns shoot people all the time.
Right. And the jury found the person not guilty.
Wow.
Yeah.
Stunning. And so then last week,
an officer from the Newman Police Department, and that's located in Central California in the Stanislaus County area, performed a traffic stop on an individual, and that person shot and killed him on Christmas Day, right around December 26th, actually, the next day after early morning hours, and he was shot and killed. There was an extensive manhunt going on for over 2 days throughout California. And then he was eventually located in Kern County, Bakersfield, California, several hundred miles to the south. And he was being harbored and concealed by his relatives, brothers, were also arrested. And this person was an illegal alien. And he had ties to the Sereno gangs. And he had prior arrests for DUI.
In this country.
In this country, in California. And as a result of him still being here, killed a peace officer who...
Who was actually a real immigrant who went through immigration.
Yes.
Brought his family here from India.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And leaves behind a wife and a child a few months old.
On Christmas.
And then his services will be forthcoming this next week.
So now we get the pleasure of running this scumbag through our legal system and locking him up and feeding him for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
It was tragic,
and we've seen other instances of that within California and other places. And it's a shame that our legislatures do more to protect illegal aliens than they do the citizens of California. And it's just a shame.
Yeah.
We've done some shows with the Remembrance Project, and they are out of, I should know this, New Mexico? I think it's New Mexico. In fact, I'm sure it is. Anyway, and that is a coalition of people whose family members and friends have been murdered by illegal aliens. I had no idea the numbers were as high as they are. Very, very high. It's a huge issue. So you guys can't do anything about it. I guess that was one thing I wanted to make sure we covered today is the fact that you don't make the laws. You just carry them out.
Right. And
so people get mad. You know, why doesn't the sheriff's office do this or that? Or why don't they hold him in the jail? And in a lot of cases, the legislature has made laws that prevent you.
Excuse me. Our charge is to not only enforce the law, but we have to comply with the law. We can't violate it. The counties and the cities are essentially subsidiaries of California and need to follow California law. And that's the unfortunate part. Rather not, even if we disagree with it, unless the law is found to be unconstitutional, we have to apply it and comply with it.
How much time do you have to, when they come up with a thing like that, do you have time to get those things sorted out? I was speaking with a police chief in another town, and they were talking about this new law about not being able to ask anybody under 15 questions without the public defender.
Right. Yeah, that's a new law that came into effect in California as well. If a person is arrested, we cannot ask them questions until we get in touch. And then now there's an on-call public defender that we have to call prior to questioning of the individual. And
you can't even ask them how old they are, though.
We could ask them that. That's a non-interrogation question. So we can ask them their name, address, pertinent information, but we can't say, did you commit this crime? That's
right.
That's an investigative
probing.
Which
you can find out how old
yeah.
they are. Okay,
because
yeah, he was saying,
questions.
I don't think I can even ask them. They hadn't. Has that gone into effect yet?
Yes.
Okay.
That is in effect. Yeah, we can ask them those questions, name, address, pertinent information like that.
So if the public defender decides not to show up?
They can get a telephone call to the public defender, and the public defender could talk with that juvenile, their client, and any defense attorney worth their weight generally will say, don't talk to law enforcement. You have the right to remain silent.
So then what do you do with them?
Well, if we have enough to arrest, we could arrest and book them into juvenile hall or the juvenile rehabilitation facility.
You just can't talk to them.
We just can't talk to them. But we have to have enough evidence to be able to make that arrest based upon probable cause to book them. If we don't want to book them, we can write up the report, finish the investigation, talk to any witnesses, look at the evidence, and then submit that report to the district attorney. And then the district attorney can review the facts of the case and make a determination if there will be criminal charges and then swear out a warrant for the individual.
Your life just keeps getting more complicated.
It is.
All this stuff, it's like, I don't know, every morning you get up, you got to look at the rule book. What is it, 7 feet thick now?
It's getting there, yeah.
I don't know how they keep track of all this.
And there was some 2,500 bills that were pieces of legislation that attempted to be laws last year in California, and it usually runs right around in that area.
And how many went through?
Probably the majority of them. I can't remember how many, but it's a lot of them. So, and it carries the spectrum. It's just not like a criminal justice system.
You don't get to like shut down for a week and everybody, all right, everybody sit down. We're going to look at all the new laws. I mean, this all goes on the ground while you're working, while the stuff's happening.
Absolutely. Like within our own Sheriff's Association, we have legislative analysts and people working in Sacramento and in the under the Golden Dome in Sacramento. And keeping us advised of legislation, and then we take stances on legislation, whether to support, oppose, or stay neutral on them, and we stay engaged. And we have phone calls generally weekly while the legislators are in session, and we work hard to either...
Keep the nutty stuff out?
You keep the nutty stuff out and pass laws that are basically good laws.
Citizenry right? needs to help you with keeping the nutty stuff out. We have to take a really quick break here. We are chatting with Shasta County Sheriff Tom Basenko. You are listening to We the People. You can find us online at wethepeopleradio.us.
Inside of Chicago, back in the USA, back in the bad old days. In the heat of a summer night, in the land of the dollar bill, when the town of Chicago died, and they talk about it still. When a man named Al Capone tried to make that town his own, and he called his gang to war with the forces of the law, I heard my mama cry. I heard her pray the night Chicago died. Brother, what a night it really was. Brother, what a fight it really was. Glory be. I heard my mama.
Prowl the streets at night. I howl when I get your scent. I turn on my flashing light. I sit in the shadow, waiting for a bite. And if you see a grin in your rearview mirror, it's a hungry black and white. I'm a police.
In my endless quest for law enforcement music.
Okay. Interesting little bump music.
Yeah. You wake up in the night and you go, I think I'm going to write a song called I'm a Police Car. I couldn't resist.
Tom, we got some folks that want to talk about this Hawaii.
But let's finish Sanctuary City first.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Just because we had some, we had a phone caller who wanted to know, how do we get rid of the Sanctuary City law?
There'd be... a couple of ways to do that. Number one, you'd have to find a legislator to carry a piece of legislation that would repeal Senate Bill 54. If a legislator did that, it'd be unlikely that that would make its way through the legislature with, the supermajority of the legislature being Dems and that had made it vote for it. And even if it did make it through the legislature with our new governor-elect Gavin Newsom, I'm sure that he would veto that. The other way is people would have to collect a number of signatures to put the issue on the ballot as a proposition to repeal Senate Bill 54. And those would be the other ways. Or determine if it went to a court of law that somehow it was unconstitutional. And usually they go through the Attorney General looks at these laws as they go through for the analyzing it and believes that they're constitutional, but the only other way is if it was declared unconstitutional through a court of law.
Is anybody suing over it?
Not that I'm aware of.
I didn't think so. Okay, so back to the people that you elected.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones who make the laws.
That's correct.
So, all right. And you were saying that... we don't have this going rampant throughout the country. States are declaring sanctuary cities because they figured out it was a dumb idea.
I'm not aware of any. But there are a number of cities and counties within California that have said, no, we don't agree with this, and we're a non-sanctuary city or county. However, that's more of a statement versus a legal avenue to do because, again, they still have to comply with state law.
Bummer.
Yeah. And then, of course, the sanctuary law is also in conflict with federal law regarding immigration and illegal aliens. So,
yeah, go ahead and carry out the laws if you can figure out which one's in charge of the other one.
Much the same as it is in marijuana. There's been, I think, 39 states that have legalized marijuana in some form, but yet marijuana is still illegal federally because it is a Schedule I drug.
Yeah.
Muddies the water.
Yeah.
I think anybody that knows you, Tom, knows you're a big supporter of the Second Amendment.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's no question about that. Let's talk about this Young versus Hawaii decision and what that's all about.
It's my understanding that within Hawaii, you could either carry concealed or open carry. And open carry is basically carry it on your hip. It's able to be seen. And then they made a law that it was illegal for open carry. And it's very difficult, if not impossible, to get a concealed weapons carry permit in Hawaii. And then they sued and said that, we could open carry. It's a constitutional right. It went to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, and they said no. But then it was going to go to an en banc, which means it gets more justices together as a group. And I think they eventually agreed with the main court. And that's making its way through. Now there's individuals in California that want to do the same thing. In California, we have the ability to carry concealed with a concealed weapons license. However, it is... California is a may issue state, that it goes with the discretion and judgment of either the issuing authority, which is generally a chief of police or a sheriff. It varies widely in California. Los Angeles, I think, has some 10 million in population, and the Los Angeles County issues about 197 permits.
Right.
In Orange County, a population of about 3.2 to 3.5 million, there are around 15,000 permits. In Shasta County, we have about 177,000 population, and we have nearly 10,000 permits.
Right.
And how many of those people running around with concealed weapons permits are shooting people?
None. Well, I won't say none, because we have had shootings. But those shootings...
Okay, but shooting them, like, you know, hiding in the bushes kind of thing.
None. We've had where people with them has used their firearm to protect themselves, ended up shooting an individual, and then that goes before the district attorney for review, and the district attorney in that case said, no, they were justified in using lethal force. So these it's just not that you hand out permits. Sacramento has over 1 million population, and they have somewhere around 10,000 as well. The sheriff there is a good sheriff, and when he took office, he's now working going on his third term. He took office, they only had a few hundred permits in Sacramento County, and now they have close to around 10,000 or so. And so these are individuals that have to undergo training. They have to undergo an extensive background, both at the local level and state and federal levels. And then it's at the discretion of the issuing authority to issue that permit.
Mm-hmm. So I think we're very fortunate in Shasta County to have that ability.
Well, it's kind of crazy, because at some point, if you can't defend yourself, I mean, you guys can't be everywhere.
That's correct.
I mean, you just can't be everywhere.
It's impossible.
How many, in the county, we've already described the geography. How many deputies do you have, like, if you're outside the city limits?
For the unincorporated area of Shasta County, generally, we have 3 to 4 deputies working on a shift, a 12-hour shift. So 7 in the morning, 7 at night, 7 at night to 7 in the morning, plus a supervisor. So anywhere from 4 to 5 people working. Sometimes it's as little as 4.
Okay, so they have a thing. Something happens.
In some areas of the county, the more rural areas, there is not 24 hours of coverage. The person goes home, the deputy, and is subject to call out after their shift. And so there is not someone actively patrolling in some areas of the county.
So you could, conceivably, if something happened, you could wait kind of a long time.
Depending
you can be
on
your
is.
Own, depending on if where was, you are and what time of day.
What we call a cold call, say it was a past tense burglary, it could be a number of hours before we get there. Even then, just with the geography of our county and the layout, if there's an emergency, it could still take us quite some time to get there, not only just with mileage, but with weather conditions, because we do have areas that are mountainous and right. Subject to snow and ice. So, but the
and a lot of our counties up here will have one person on, maybe two.
If they have them on, again, some of the more rural counties, smaller than Shasta, have no deputies on duty in the late evening and early morning hours because they're just so small in population and for their makeup of their organization. But back to concealed carry, so an open carry with this Young v. Hawaii, there's working on a court case in California similar to it to sue because if the citizen is unable to obtain a concealed weapons permit, they're not able to open carry because that's illegal. And now they'll be suing for that and or trying to get a shell issue state there where basically if they're clear to own guns, the issue
so if they're not a criminal.
Shell issue. Now, in those instances, there's plenty of people that have some instances of drug backgrounds, arrests and or investigations or convictions for theft. And other things, and or some mental health issues. Maybe they have not been placed into mental health custody for 5150, being able to care for themselves or others, or suicidal. But they still have issues. Those aren't necessarily all the people that you want carrying concealed weapons, or people with a lot of alcohol violations, or maybe alcohol or drug addictions. Also, again, those aren't people that you want carrying firearms.
So it's, I mean, you can make those decisions as they come, but the just flat prohibition.
And we talked about a number of new sheriffs in coming in January. The most of them will be sworn in on January 7th. And in some counties that have one Bay Area county, they have about 500,000 population, but only issue less than 100 CCW permits. But the new sheriff there coming in, he wants to redo the concealed carry practice and policy there. And so he looks at expanding the ability for citizens of his county to have a concealed weapons permit. And that permit, unless restricted, is good for the entire state of California, with the exception of restricted or prohibited areas, such as
federal buildings and stuff.
Yeah.
So when we have a
really quick break, but when we come back, we need to talk.
Okay. I'm opening next
my
time.
My questions are good. Bill's questions.
You trumped me.
Poor Bill.
See, like I told you could do the breaks, but he doesn't like doing the breaks.
Yeah. Who's in charge here, Bill?
I have a witness.
Yeah. We'll talk.
We'll be right back.
You're in big trouble.
There's trouble on the street tonight. I can feel it in my bones. I had a premonition that it should not go alone. I knew the gun was loaded, but I didn't think he'd kill. Everything exploded in the blood began to spill. So baby, here's your ticket. Put the suitcase in your hand. Here's a little money now. Do it just the way we planned. You'd be cool for 20 hours and I'll pay you 20 grand.
Sitting in a coffee shop, just minding my own affairs. When all of a sudden, this policeman caught me unaware. He said, is your name Pedro? I said, yeah, I guess so. He said, then come with me, because you're the man we've been looking for. I said, hey, man, I've been framed. Hey, no, really, man, I was framed. I never do nothing wrong, man. But every time I get the blame.
It wouldn't be right without a little Cheech and Chong.
Cheech and Chong, yeah. Some good bump music today. You know, there's also within, we've been talking about the Young v. Hawaii case, and there was another case in California. It was Peruta versus San Diego, and that was a California case. In the Peruta case, same thing. It was also combined with another case of Richards v. Yolo County and Prieto. And Prieto being the sheriff at the time. And basically they said, hey, we can't get a concealed weapons carry permit, and now it's illegal to open carry. So we have the right to keep and bear arms under the Second Amendment. And that went before court, and then it ended up in the 9th District Court of Appeals, the same Court of Appeals that heard the Young case. And in that case, they said that it is still the sheriff's issuing authority, could be chiefs too. So it's still the issuing authority for sheriffs and chiefs' discretion whether or not to issue that concealed weapons permit. The ninth heard that, and then the sheriff there and the state decided not to take it before an en banc of the ninth. And so we have that somewhat conflicts with Young, and now they have a court case going before in the process, I think, to go before the ninth to see if they can resolve this issue within California. So there's always the court cases are changing it. There's a large amount of cases that are going through the court now. You can see those court cases if you go to the California Rifle Pistol Association website and at www.crpa.org, and that's also in their publication of the Firing Line, which is their publication they put out and keep it advanced. But there's probably at least 20 cases, both on the state and federal levels, that are going through there that you can read about. In California, January 1st being just around the corner in a few days, a number of laws that will be coming into effect. Since we've been talking about CCWs, Assembly Bill 2103 changed the law now that requires people that are getting a CCW permit or license to qualify and then shoot their gun with a passing score, a course of fire, and then also people that are renewing their CCW permits. In California, a CCW permit is good for 2 years, and you have to renew it. So that the qualification is set again by the issuing authority here in Shasta to be the sheriff. So here they'll have to shoot 4 volleys of 5 rounds at the 7-yard line and qualify with an 80% for a passing score. So 16 out of 20 must make it into a 8-ring on a what we call a B-27 target, which is a silhouette target. So that's a roughly 8.5 by 11 area that you have to get 16 rounds out of 20 from 7 yards into that area.
So each gun that's on your permit, you have to qualify with 20 rounds.
That's correct. And
so you still have to take a class when you very first start.
Yeah,
and because now, people think, I don't know, people who don't have concealed weapons permits think, I don't know what they think. I think they think you just have that, and then
Now they have to take a here in Shasta, you have to take a 12-hour course if you're initially applying for one and getting your first-time permit, and that includes range time. And now they'll have to qualify with each gun they have on the permit. And here, it used to be as many as you wanted to have on the permit, but that's caused some complications for us at the sheriff's office. So now we're going to be limiting it to five guns on a permit for there, and that's kind of the average throughout the state, from 3 to 5 guns to have on there. And it's good to be more familiar with 1 or 2 platforms and versus the way the gun functions than having a whole plethora on there. The guns aren't needed for transportation. Some people put in, I need this to transport guns, and you don't need that because you can transport guns legally other ways than having a CCW. But also another law that came into effect, and this will be taking effect now, and so there's been a rush on getting people are getting in to try and get their CCWs before the first of the year so they don't have to qualify, but when they come up again, they'll have to. And then Department of Justice, the state, restricts people from renewing more than 30 days in advance, and so that makes it a little more difficult if somebody wants to get the maybe renew with a 1 year to spare. But another bill has been Senate Bill 1346, and in the state that bans the manufacture and sale of bump stocks, which is a device that goes on to a semi-automatic rifle that allows it to fire more quickly. It does not turn it into an automatic weapon, and it does not increase the cyclic rate. That's the ability for it to go. It just makes it, you can fire a little bit more rapidly than unless you have some very good trigger skills with your finger. And a bump stock, essentially, you can do the same type of operation with a rubber band on a trigger to do it.
But they've made it sound like...
Yeah, it's a big bad thing.
Like this is some big scary thing that everybody has.
Next, they'll probably have a law to outlaw rubber bands. So...
Well, we've outlawed straws, so we probably shouldn't joke about that.
That's right. With Senate Bill 1200, before when there were restraining orders with domestic violence, law enforcement could seize or the person would have to hand in their firearms. And now it allows police to also seize ammunition and magazines to enforce that, because before you could get the guns but not the ammunition or the magazines. So this expands out the restraining order law. And then also for Assembly Bill 3129, now anybody that's been convicted of a misdemeanor domestic violence offense after January 1 will no longer be able to own or possess a firearm for the rest of their lives. There was already federal law, but now they've made it state law as well. So another big change. So right now, a person that's under the age of 21 is prohibited from purchasing a handgun. But now the Senate and the governor in their wisdom prohibits anybody under the age of 21 from purchasing a long gun from a licensed dealer. So a long gun is a rifle or a shotgun. And so that takes effect January 1 as well. And so people can serve our nation and go into the...
And they can vote.
They can vote. They can smoke.
Drive a car.
They can drive a car. They can actually get a straw at a restaurant. And but they will be unable to purchase a long gun now. And then they can go into the military and learn how to shoot fully automatic weapons. But thinking when they, if they got out before age 21, or if they wanted to purchase one in California while they were still serving, they'd be able to do that in California.
And I suppose if you live in a city, that's probably not a big inconvenience. But if you live in the country,
and there is exemptions for law enforcement and members of the military who have a valid and unexpired hunting license to be able to do that. So
there you go. That's what I was going to say. If you live out and and you're a hunter,
and then so also. Is that a phone, or is that coming up on break?
It is coming up on break. Okay, we've got about 25 seconds.
Okay, so one last one is somebody that has been hospitalized for mental health issues twice in a year or more are now would be prohibited from owning a firearm for the rest of their lives, too. So people with mental health issues going on. So that's some of the stuff that will be coming up.
Probably an awesome idea.
Yes.
And we'll talk about more laws in the next hour.
Okay.
So theme song from our favorite sheriff, Andy Griffith. On the way out, you can find us at WeThePeopleRadio.us.